music is back. The sports ball music is back.
Woo! People are going to be so confused.
Woo! Woo!
Woo! Get out. Woo! Nope.
It's episode 50. So
amazing,
right? We're going all throwback. We're going all throwback today on the 50th episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Hello, everybody. Hello, friends. Jim Nance alongside Anthony Masterson. I am Tyler Mon. 50 episodes, man. 50 episodes. And ironically, it's going to be like our shortest episode of the season.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of episodes.
Wah, wah. 50. How the hell did we make it to 50 episodes?
If you would have told me last March when we started this thing we'd have 50 episodes under our belt, I would have punched you square in the face.
If you listen weekly, that's almost a year's worth of episodes. Because there are 52 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
52 weeks.
There you go.
if I seem distracted, it's because I'm on a mission to go report like the 1,000 fake Twitter followers that we got like 3 weeks ago right now.
We still have not gotten rid of those. But
no,
hey,
no, we didn't.
So I'm gonna go. I was at work yesterday and somebody saw I had the page up. Like, wow, 2,000 followers for the PPP. That's pretty impressive. And I was like, yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, it's not so really. Not really when they're all, you know, names in Russian lettering.
I don't know. Well, we're actually, I think, legitimately close to 1,000.
Oh, no, we're over 1,000, I think, okay. On our own. But, yeah, not so much when, you know, Deepak Patel and Hola Gunju Hola Tunde follow us.
Deepak Chopra follows us?
Deepak Chopra follows us. And he has an egg profile picture. Hey, welcome in. It's episode number 50 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And, you know, last night, first of all, the city of Denver almost blew away.
Yeah.
Secondly, the Rockies saw their lead blow away.
The Rockies had a throwback game.
Yeah, that was a very, like, 96 Coors Field kind of game.
We got to figure out who's...
Yeah. Fire away.
By the way, first
5-0. Jorge Julio, right?
Jorge Julio, yes. Yeah. We had Jeff Manship, the dude boat in 2013. It could be the dude boat edition. Jamie Moyer.
Okay.
Jamie Moyer in 2012. That could be
a strong contender.
Jim Miller, Jorge Julio, David Cortez in 05 and 06.
Okay.
Travis Driscoll, Scott Ellerton, Colorado Zone, yeah. Lamar, Colorado Zone, 2003 to 04. Benny Ogbayani, Juan Acevedo, Julian Tavares, and Garvin Alston, which sounds like somebody who owns a car dealership back in my hometown in Wyoming.
Yeah, that does. Come by Garvin Alston GMC in Powell, Wyoming. Get yourself the brand new 1989 model. I assume that's what you guys are getting in Powell.
Brand new 89 models, yeah. Yes. That's about right. Yeah.
There are a lot of them on there.
Yeah.
I say that every week. There's a lot of good choices here this week.
Usually there's not, though.
Yeah, usually.
The dude boat's fun. Jamie Moyer, I feel like he is the most known for giving up that monster grand slam to Giancarlo Stanton that basically
that
ended his career.
That
broke the scoreboard.
Yeah.
At Marlins Park. That's what we'll always remember Jamie Moyer for.
Yeah, we really
he
will.
Was actually halfway decent for three starts for the Rockies.
Yeah, I know. Jamie Moyer had like a handful of like respectable days on the mound.
When he was shucking up 78 mile an hour slop at age like 84.
Jamie Moyer. If you click on Jamie Moyer's baseball reference page, his picture is amazing on there. It's like awful facial hair, a weird Mariners BP hat that they only wore for like a certain amount of time. But yeah, no, he really was not like, I mean, he was not good, but he was not terrible.
His first four starts, he had a 2.28 ERA.
Yeah.
You know,
because guys get confused as to what the hell is happening when they are going up facing a dude who, you know, only throws mid-70s.
Yeah. Like after that, he gave up his runs gave up were 4-6-5-1. He gave up one run in a six and a third against the D-backs on May 16th, 2012, and then gave up 13 earned runs in his next 8 2/3 innings and was done for his career.
Yep, you know, Jamie Moyer. And now he, I think he owns like a series of glass repair places or something in the Seattle area.
Well, and his sons are like 80 years old too now. So, like, after they were playing ball in the Big West, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think they're like college age.
Okay.
Which makes sense because he's 50.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So he could have kids who are 30 pretty easily.
He debuted in baseball on June 16th, 1986. I was a month old.
I was less than a year old. Wow.
And he pitched to 2012.
That is absurd. Huh. Oh, this is our first episode with me being 30. What does that do for us?
Nothing. Nothing.
Okay. I would go here. I mean, Moyer's a good one. I would go Jorge Julio just out of remembrance of he was the subject of such hatred in 2007, which was his only year in a Rockies uniform. And in game 163 that year, he basically almost blew it for the Rockies. Here was his line in that game. 0.0 innings pitched, 2 hits, 2 runs, both earned, 1 walk, no strikeouts. He gave up the home run
Scott Hairston, right?
Scott Hairston.
Scott Hairston killed the Rockies.
The Venable before there was a Venable in St. Louis, or in San Diego, back when they were Hairstons. Scott Hairston, that inning, Brian Giles led off with a walk. And then Scott Hairston gave up a massive home run, or Jorge Julio gave up a massive home run to Scott Hairston, and that made it a 13-to-whatever game at that point. God knows what the
good story,
game,
Tyler.
Six to four game at that point.
Good story.
I'm
Tyler.
Too busy trying to block these people. 8-6 was the score after that home run, and but I just remember him being booed off the mound.
Well, yeah.
And then Ramon Ramirez, of all people, came in and saved the day.
Yeah.
I'd go Jorge Julio.
He was Wilton Lopez before Wilton Lopez was Wilton Lopez. 62 innings for the Rockies that year, spending 68 appearances. He had a 5.23 ERA. He had 7 blown saves that year.
Not good.
That doesn't even include the play-in game, because that wasn't technically a blown save, because it was a tie game.
Right, yeah, it was a tie game. Wow. All right, what's your vote?
I don't know, man. I feel like we're getting old.
Yeah.
I feel like we just
that's 50. True.
I feel like Jamie Moyer has to be.
Yeah, that's true. I just had my 30th
birthday.
We've also
spent way too much time debating this Memorial Edition's name.
It's episode 50. We got to get this one right.
It's true.
Obviously. All right.
My vote's for Jamie Moyer.
The Jamie Moyer Memorial Edition, with honorable mention to Jorge Julio, former game 163 legend. Something like that. So last night, not a real fun game for your Colorado Rockies. It seemed like it was going to be great. They go up 3-0. They blow that lead. They come back, take a lead, head to the ninth with a lead. And, you know, John Axford, this is how you know you're a Rockies fan. When a guy has been very successful, every time John Axford has come into a game for the last 6 weeks, I've thought, well, at some point he's going to be bad. At some point he's going to blow a save. And last night it happened.
And it finally did. Chickens finally came home to roost, or whatever the hell phrase you want to use.
Yeah.
First blown save of the year. He's now given up 5 earned runs in his last 3 appearances. So that is trending in the wrong direction for John Axford. But if you watched him pitch last night, he was all over the place. He was missing by feet, not inches. And that's a big, big problem for John Axford. He still has the good stuff. He still has the 97, 98, but he had no command whatsoever last night. And what sucks is that, he walked 2 guys, but he really got BABIPped in that inning too, and he could have easily been out of the inning. He got the strikeout what's his dude boat face?
Yeah.
Owings. Then he got 1-2 on Saltalamacchia and had a chance to put Jared Saltalamacchia away.
Who is batting, I think, around 140.
137, in fact.
And yet had a multi-hit game yesterday, I believe.
He went 1-for-3.
Okay, so and he walked, right?
He got on base 3 times.
Right, right.
So you were up 1-2 on Jared Saltalamacchia. He'd blown 2 fastballs just right by him and then couldn't put him away, ended up walking in the tying run. And then you're like, okay, well, at least you can maybe do something here. Aaron Hill comes up, hits a sac fly, and it's like, well, that's how that works. You got a couple of, seeing eye singles. You had a bloop that fell over DJ's head, and then it's over.
Yep. And those games are going to happen.
Sure.
You just don't want them to happen when you so badly need wins, because
that
slips the Rockies back to 9 games under 500.
When you're a bad team, you really can't afford to lose games when you have a 2-run lead in the 9th inning at home.
Right. Right.
Because if you're a good team, you're like, okay, we'll get him the next day. Well, when you're a bad team, you need every win you can get.
Especially against teams in the division.
Yeah.
You know.
And that was the D-backs' first win when trailing into the ninth inning last night. So it was, they're now, 1-29, I think?
They also have had 10 chances this year to pull back to 500. They have lost every game. They'll get another one today. And if you're looking for a silver lining, it's that you can still get out of this with a series win. But Rockies could have and should have been going for a sweep today. And instead, they'll have to go for the series victory. And it's just, again, those are going to happen. You know that John Axford was not going to continue being that this entire season. But when you so badly need wins, and I don't know. I mean, I think we're probably getting to the point of this season where you start thinking, is it better for the Rockies to be lounging around out of contention because that might force some action at the deadline? I don't know if we have to have that conversation yet, but what the second wild card has done. Yeah, exactly. What the second wild card has done is it has made this last month not as, what would the word be here? Nobody panics heading into
shit-ballsy?
The postseason race. Yeah, because everybody's in contention still, you know? And that's,
right now, the Rockies are 8.5 games out of a second wild card spot. They're actually closer to the division. Yeah.
And neither of those by any stretch.
Division, 8.5 in the wild card.
Neither of those by any stretch on June 25th are insurmountable, you know? No. And they're not going to win the division. But if the Rockies got hot and went on one big winning streak, you know, even for the Rockies, if you go on a 7-game winning streak and then you win 5 out of the next 7 after that, you're an above 500 team. You're right in the mix. You know, I don't think that this team is delusional like the Diamondbacks and is going to do something like trade away Touki Toussaint or the equivalent of that for Phil Gosselin. And I love Phil Gosselin.
We worked with Phil Gosselin.
He's an awesome guy. I'm really excited to actually hopefully see him at some point when the Diamondbacks come through town, because Phil's a great guy, but what the hell? Like, what?
Phil and Kate plus 8. Yeah.
What? So, I don't think the Rockies are that, but you are getting to piss or get off the pot time, I guess, soon.
Yeah.
Because there's going to come a juncture where you say, are we in this to try to do something here, or are we in this to try to plan for 2016? I think the Rockies should be in it to try to plan for 2016. There are some big issues with guys who you thought were going to be key pieces of that 2016 roster now. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes. Yeah. But, I think we're starting to get to that point.
And especially with the trade chips that the Rockies do have, especially in Willian Rosario and a guy like John Axford. Now, Willian Rosario is starting to hit, and that's a good thing for the Rockies because that means his trade value is going up. Rosario right now, the average at 287, the OPS at 779. He has 5 home runs, 15 driven in. He is a trade chip, and he should be one, and a good one for an American League team in need of a DH, team like Minnesota. They should want to get a guy like Willian Rosario in there, maybe a platoon with Kenny Vargas. But the thing is, with Willian Rosario, the Rockies have guys who can easily replace him and do his job better than Willian can, especially with a guy like, hey, Kyle Parker. Kyle Parker. AAA.
Who?
Exactly.
Never heard of him. Hashtag free.
Yeah. Kyle Parker, if they want to trade Rosario and bring Kyle Parker up to the show, he could easily slide in and be just as good, if not maybe a little bit less powerful than Willian in that platoon with Ben Paulson at first base until Justin Morneau comes back. They also have Matt McBride, who is your classic 4A player, but he is a guy who can play all over the field, and all he does is hit. Not really for power necessarily, but he can hit, and he has at every single level he's been at. So this is going to be a fascinating month for Jeff Breidich's first trade deadline. And you're absolutely right. The second wild card throws a wrench into everything for every team. Every team besides probably the Brewers think they're in it. I'm sure the Phillies think they're in it because Ruben Amaro is a psycho. But every team thinks they're in it save for a couple. And that's pretty much it. And so everyone does not want to throw in the towel in late June like they used to because they think they'll still have a chance come August and think they'll go on like, you know, a win 12 out of 13 games or something like that and jump right back in the race, which obviously is eminently possible, but not really probable for a lot of teams out there.
I just, coming into this season, virtually nobody thought that the Rockies were going to compete. You know?
Correct.
So I don't really see the purpose of hanging on to pieces if somebody comes out with a deal that would be good for Willian Rosario. That would be good for Carlos Gonzalez. No point. And that's where I think we're going to see the big difference in this front office versus the last front office is, are they going to hang on to guys just for the point of hanging on to guys? And I don't think that will happen here because we have seen throughout the season that when guys don't perform, they don't hang around. So, yeah. And I don't think it's that case. I don't think it's they're going to be dealing guys because they're not performing. I think it's because they're actually going to be looking out for what will eventually improve this team.
I mean, and you saw what they've done this year. They cut Jolice in spring training. They sent down Matzik.
By the way, who's back in the division now.
Who's back with the Diamondbacks. He actually had a decent run in Columbus in AAA for the Indians. But he was on the major league roster, I think, by a certain time, like June 15th or something like that. And he had a clause. He could ask for his release, and he did. And the D-backs picked him up because – you know, the D-backs just want, you know, established guys ahead of their high school guys who
aren't pitching for
the big leagues anytime soon. So
they got older guys. They got older guys who were ahead of the talented ones.
No, but they have shown a propensity to not be too sentimental when it comes to guys. So they removed LaTroy Hawkins from the closer's role almost immediately after his first couple of bone saves. So it's that kind of thing that makes you think that this could be a differently run organization. But time will tell in the next month, definitely. The next month is going to be huge for the Rockies and for Jeff Bridich.
It will it'll show us, I think, a lot of what 2016 will look like, too. And, you know, with that in mind, here on the Jamie Moyer Memorial Edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, let's dive into a couple of storylines that are starting to get a little bit more than concerning. The Rockies obviously started this season with two-fifths of their rotation being young guys who – you figured would be big pieces of the puzzle going forward who have turned into head scratchers at best and really, really frightening cases at worst. Eddie Butler started the campaign 3-6 with a 4.80 ERA for the Rockies. You kind of thought at one point Eddie might be ready to save his hide. He went six innings and allowed a run on four hits and a win over the Phillies on May 30th. Next time out, though, at home against the Marlins, 11 hits over 5 1/3, gave up six runs there. Didn't strike out more than four in any start after opening his opening start of the year, not opening day, but on the road at Milwaukee, he struck out five. After that, four was his season high, and the majority of his starts were three or two or fewer. They sent Eddie down to AAA Albuquerque, and there things have not been good. His first start was fantastic. Seven innings, two runs on six hits against Tacoma. He got a no decision in that game, but since then, very concerning, and they've only gotten worse. Against El Paso, each of his last two times out, five innings, nine hits, five runs back on the 17th, and then just a couple of days ago on the 23rd, two innings, seven hits, seven runs, walked five, struck out three. So far, he has walked 10 batters. He's only struck out six over his 14 innings in AAA, and the ERA sits at nine even. Let's talk about Eddie first. What's going on with Eddie?
Maybe he has a innate fear of Chihuahuas.
That could be.
Facing El Paso
twice. By the way, when I was down in the Phoenix area for spring training, we went to the Oakland Athletics Complex and stopped by a tamale place there. And inside the tamale place, somebody had just painted the El Paso Chihuahuas logo on the wall. It was like a large... I tweeted this picture out back in March. It was like this huge El Paso Chihuahuas logo just painted on the wall. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was obviously like, they didn't like, you know, it wasn't the fat head. Like somebody just painted the logo on. It was very strange. He's just scared of Chihuahuas. He doesn't like small dogs.
I think so.
Or Cody Decker. Those two things. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's just an extension of more of the same as what we saw with the Rockies this season, where he's not trusting his stuff at all. You know, we've had this discussion many, many times on this podcast that Eddie Butler's stuff is major league level, but he does not have the confidence in it to throw it in any count or to, you know, throw it down the middle of the plate, basically. His stuff is so good, sometimes you think you can just throw it wherever you want, but he tries to nibble, and he misses his spots, and then he walks a couple of guys, and then he gets in the stretch and he gets upset, and then all of a sudden, here you go. And it's another terrible, terrible start for Eddie Butler. I don't know what is wrong with Eddie Butler, but it sucks. And I don't want to keep trying to dwell on it, but
don't like it.
No.
It sucks, and we don't like it.
It's awful. It's awful, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Like this year, with runners on base, opponents hit .324 against Eddie Butler. With none on, they hit .315. It's not like it's like, oh, you can look at it and say like, oh, well, maybe just because, you know, going from the stretch or going from the windup, like we saw with John Gray earlier this year, where his splits with runners on and with nobody on were crazy. Like right now, you have no idea what's wrong with Eddie Butler, besides the fact that he's just not trusting the major league stuff that he has. He's got the 97-mile-an-hour fastball. He's got the Bugs Bunny changeup. But we haven't really seen a lot of that since he's put on a Rockies uniform. We saw it in the minor leagues, but we haven't seen it the last couple of years.
Honestly, yeah, I mean,
point,
we didn't
at this
even
point,
see
you hope he's injured at this point because you don't want to see him putting up these kind of numbers when he's healthy.
We saw it in the minor leagues up until to the end of 2 years ago, basically. Because even last year, the strikeout totals really dipped, and it kind of made you wonder. I mean, Fangraphs did a whole thing on how, you know, guys who lose their strikeout stuff, they don't really come back from that. Like, you don't all of a sudden just start striking guys out again.
Right.
And that's what seemed kind of strange about Eddie Butler is it's not like the stuff regressed. I mean, you see it. Even when he takes him out of Coors Field, you see how good that stuff is. But he's just not throwing it. What we saw him do to Xander Bogaerts in the Futures game.
Yeah.
Back in 2013, that's what you thought you were going to be getting from Eddie Butler on a regular basis. And that guy, even though he shows that quality arsenal, he does not show that approach to hitters, and he certainly doesn't make guys look silly like that quite as much as you would have expected him to at the major league level, even at the AAA level.
No. I mean, his 2012-2013 seasons, he averaged about 8.5 Ks per 9 innings, which is very, very good. Since then, it's been about 5.5.
Ugh. And at the major league level, I mean, especially at Coors Field, you need to be able to get your strikeout stuff nailed down. I mean, this—it's you pitch with too much traffic. I talked to Mark Appel the other day for a story for MILB.com, and Appel said
just being called up AAA, by the
right, way. Yeah, finally got promoted to AAA Fresno. By the way, Aaron Gleeman, who normally does outstanding work on Hardball Talk, wrote a whole thing about how disappointed the Astros have to be in Appel because he's only making it to AAA now. And dude was, you know, I get, yeah, he had a high ceiling. Maybe he should have been there sooner, but he's 23 years old. He's just barely 2 years out of the draft. Like, I don't think we can bury Mark Appel quite yet. But Appel was facing the San Antonio Missions and gave up a leadoff double to Hunter Renfro, who's the top prospect in the Padres organization, and then came back and got three straight outs to get out of it. And I asked him kind of, how did you approach that? And he got a pop out from the first guy, and then he got a strikeout. And he made the point. He said, whenever I have runners on base with less than two outs, especially when I have guys in scoring position, I love being able to get a strikeout because it is the only out that is not going to threaten the inning. If I go out and I'm able to get a strikeout, there is very little chance that that guy is going to advance in any way or cause a bigger problem than what he already is by being on second base. At Coors Field, you have to have that mentality. And not only that, but you have to have the ability to do that. You have to have the ability where if something falls in, if Charlie Blackmon makes a bad read on something, if a guy gets an extra base, then you have to be able to go to that well, strand a guy at second or at third via the strikeout. And that's why it's always kind of baffled me that the Rockies never went away from just the let's generate weak contact philosophy.
Or sinker ballers, yeah.
Right, exactly. Why not try to get some guys who have strikeout ability? A little bit more than what you've done.
You know, whatever you've been trying to do hasn't really worked.
Right, so and the thing that's weird,
why not try something different?
Right. Even with the guys who they have brought in to maybe try something different, like Eddie Butler and like John Gray, and this isn't a fair thing to say about John Gray over his last couple of starts because I think he struck out 16 over his last two starts now, but even those guys, the strikeout stuff has disappeared lately.
Yeah.
Which is very strange.
And it disappears as they get higher up in the levels for the Rocky system, which is concerning. You wonder
very
if that's an organizational thing or if that's just maybe the higher competition is catching up to the stuff. And with John Gray, I don't think that's it. I mean, obviously, he's done very, very well the last 2 months. So I don't think that's it at all.
We're not going to talk about John Gray this time.
But we didn't want to keep dwelling on John Gray because at this point, it's just becoming a farce that he's still in AAA when, you know, David Hale is letting up rockets around the yard and Chris Russon is doing the same. So
we will make one note about John Gray. There was a very good piece put together by our pal Chris Jackson of the Albuquerque Examiner who did ask Glenn Allen Hill, the manager of the AAA Albuquerque Isotopes, why he thought John Gray was still in AAA. And Hill said, quote, whether John was at this level or if he was at a lower level, what John Gray needs to do is keep doing what he's doing so that he is saturated with matching his ability and his success. And this is, I believe, a situation where it's not really a matter of if he's ready or not.
He continued and said, John Gray is part of the future, so anytime we can take advantage, I think, of getting him to the point where he's totally comfortable with his identity and learning from his experience, I don't think by no means we'd want to take away from that because he discovers something every time he goes out. So I thought it was interesting. It's saying a lot without really saying much.
Yeah.
But I think what the point is there is I think the Rockies want John Gray to get used to. I've tried to use this analogy, and it sounds a little bit strange, but I think the Rockies want to get used to John Gray always beating the training horse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's the thoroughbred. And I think AAA, they want him to get used to being dominant. And at this point, team's 9 games under 500. They're 8 games out. I think we wanted to see John Gray promoted over the last few weeks because maybe it sparks something and maybe you get this team on a run. But at this point, if things start falling apart, if the Rockies keep drifting away from contention, then maybe you leave John Gray for a little while longer, another 3 or 4 starts, and get him to the point where he is lights out at the AAA level on a 5-day after 5-day after 5-day basis, and then promote him to the major leagues because you didn't do that with Eddie Butler.
I agree, but it's been 2 months. It's been 2 full months of excellent pitching. Two full months, 10 starts.
I'm just trying to figure out something because
I know
it is strange.
It's getting to a point right now where there isn't an excuse to make.
Right.
For him still being in AAA right now. It doesn't make any sense. Like, what else is there for him to do? And I know that Saturday's start is still TBD in Albuquerque, which is good because that's supposed to be John Gray's start. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't like it. There's no reason not to bring him up right now.
It's weird.
It's about trying to field the best team on any given day. And if John Gray is still in AAA and the Rockies are trotting out Chris Russen every 5th day, that's not the best team they can put on the field.
Although Chris Russen, to be fair, actually threw okay his last time out, too, after a couple of really, really bad starts.
Chris Russen is a soft-tossing lefty.
Right. So is Matt Krim.
He is not a consistent starter in Major League Baseball.
Remember that time you made Matt Krim want to kill you by calling him a soft-tossing lefty?
I made a lot of people want to kill me in 2010. John Gilmore and Matt Krim. Kent Willis.
Those are the Kent Willis wanted to kill you, and then he fell asleep in the dugout during a game. Yeah. And he forgot all about it. So we're not going to talk about John Gray, but it's, you know, we figured we had to throw in a quick update on Gray Watch. The other guy I really want to talk about, and
Do we have to?
He's so close to both of our hearts, and a PDP guest in seasons past, but Tyler Matzek, this season has gone off the rails in such strange fashion with Tyler Matzek. When Matzek left the major league rotation, his numbers were not terrible, which is weird. After his first 4 starts this year, he was 2-0 with a 2.70 ERA. But you could see the cracks in the facade emerging. And then in the loss against Arizona on May 6th, the wheels fell off. He walked 6 over 2 innings, allowed 4 runs on 3 hits. The Rockies removed him from competition. That was the way they phrased it. And they sent him to AAA Albuquerque to start getting himself kind of reacclimated. He made 1 appearance 7 days later, and it was a dumpster fire. 7 walks, 7 runs, 1 hit in 1 inning. He struck out 2. After that, it was over a month out of competition. And again, we've talked about this before on the show. This is not something new for Tyler Matzek. We've seen this in the past. Back in his minor league career, he was sent away from the organization entirely to work with his high school pitching coach to kind of get himself back mentally, and it worked. Matzek climbed the ladder after that, made his major league debut last year. This year, the Rockies didn't do that. According to all reports, they sent him to Arizona. He got his work in at the facility. The Rockies wanted to make sure, and everybody has said with Matzek, it's as much a mental thing as it is a physical thing. And, you know, it seemed like they wanted to keep it in-house this time around, and it has not worked, apparently, because in Matzek's return, he is pitching now with the short season Class A Boise Hawks. These are the numbers. His first time out,
God, it's ugly.
1 inning, he walked 2, he struck out 1, he didn't issue, he didn't allow any hits, didn't allow any runs, you know, that's something. Next time out against Tri-City on June 21st, 2 hits, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, again, no runs in 1 inning. But last night, a third of an inning, 6 runs, all of them earned on no hits, 5 walks, 1 hit batsman. He struck out 1 batter. Apparently, he threw several pitches behind right-handed hitters. Tyler Matzek is a left-handed pitcher. this is very concerning.
This is what you always were worried about,
yeah,
with Tyler Matzek, because
it's basically the pitching version of the Yips right now.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like Rick Ankiel.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is right now. It's he has no idea where it's going. It's a Steve Blass disease. And that's what we had to talk about right now with Tyler Matzek. You were always worried this was going to happen, even when he was pitching well, always, or at least in the back of my mind, I was always like, well, you know, if he walks a guy, what happens here? You know, because he's had such problems with that in the minor leagues. And right now, this is an absolute doomsday scenario for Tyler Matzek. And last time it took him, you know, whatever, a couple of months away with his high school pitching coach to get himself ironed out. And I don't know what the answer is now, if he has to do that again. Like, you don't want to keep sending a guy who's, you know, 24 years old back to his high school pitching coach every single time he gets a little bit rusty. But we saw what Tyler Matzek can do in the major league level. He put up an ERA just over 4 last year and was very, very good. I mean, he had 117 and two-thirds innings last year, 4.05 ERA, 91 punch-outs, 117 and two-thirds innings. You know, he only walked 44 batters in that time, which is for him was very, very good. It's so sad. You don't want to keep talking about it because, you know, this guy's worked so hard to get back to where he was and pitch through all the wildness that he had coming out of high school. And to see him back where he was, what, 3-4 years ago, 2011, where he was 4 years ago now, 4 years later, after all that he did to get back and was arguably the best candidate to start opening day for the Rockies this year. That's how good he was last season. And to see him back where he was 4 years ago, it's really, really depressing. And I don't want to keep talking about it. It sucks.
Let's just get away with it. I just don't know what you do next with Tyler Matzek.
That's what I'm saying. You can't keep sending him back to his high school pitching coach.
No, you know? I mean,
at some point he's a big leaguer. He should be a big leaguer.
I think the Rockies, to me, and I know for a fact, the Rockies were somewhat upset with the traction. Well, and, you know, let's put it this way. It was the last administration, which was, you know, basically the North Korea of baseball. And they were upset with the fact that the story got so much traction of Tyler Matzek going back to work with his high school pitching coach and get himself ironed out that way. And you could somewhat understand that because I think when you're a major league organization, you don't want to look weak in the sense that, oh, well, we couldn't get this guy figured out. We had to go make him work with his amateur coach to get himself sorted because we don't know what the hell we're doing. But this is, I mean, again, back in 2011, June 30th of 2011, John Manuel of Baseball America wrote, Matzek and assistant general manager Bill Guyvet met in Asheville last week, and Guyvet said they came to the decision together in trying to find a solution to Matzek's control problems. 6'3", 210-pounder had been demoted from High Class A Modesto to Asheville after going 0-3 with a 10.09 ERA in the Cal League and was 0-2 with a 14 ERA with the Tourists. Matzek's pitching coach in California, Lon Fulmer, said he has already seen progress with Matzek after working with him for 4 days. And this is the kicker. He has resumed a series of conditioning and pitching drills designed by Dr. Mike Marshall, the 1974 Cy Young Award winner in the National League and pitching guru whose ideas are generally shunned by the Major League Baseball establishment. Fulmer called Matzek a, quote, hybrid Marshall protege and said his control problems stem from a more conventional delivery that Matzek has adopted since signing. That's where I think a lot of the issues come. The Mike Marshall thing, we're not going to get into. You'll have to read about it on your own because it's a very complicated story, a very complicated situation to get into. But Mike Marshall is kind of a guy who carved his own niche and his own regimen and his own a lot of long toss, a lot of different stuff between starts. That is, I think, part of the issue is that Tyler Matzek grew up learning to be one guy, was very successful that way, and then he got into professional baseball, and the Rockies said, now we're going to do it
this
way.
That's my favorite thing in the damn world, man. You pitch so well when you're a kid growing up.
Don't you love that?
And become a top 10 pick.
Right.
Or a top 5 pick, or whatever you end up doing.
And don't worry, we'll fix you.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, what you did to get yourself here was great. Now let's change everything about it.
And not knocking the Rockies, because
that's the damn thing I've ever heard.
Every organization does that, which is ridiculous.
Talk about the Diamondbacks with Trevor Bauer.
Right.
Trevor Bauer, they tried to change him immediately. And he was like, no, I know what I'm doing. And they go, okay, well, we'll trade you for Didi Gregorius. And they did.
And you wonder how much that is the case with Touki Toussaint, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, no, I completely agree. And it's, you know, it's not just a baseball thing. I mean, you see that in football, too. You know, there was a team, who was it? I think it was in this town that drafted a quarterback who couldn't even throw. So, you know, that's something. But
it was a Tim Tebow joke, for those of you who didn't get it.
Who's that?
for those of you who are not on board.
Well, kids, Tim Tebow was a third-string quarterback back in the year 2011.
But that, I agree. I think it's very it's very strange how Major League Baseball organizations do that, where you pick a guy in the draft and you think, all right, your stuff is great, and now we're going to completely break you down and rebuild you the way we want you.
That makes zero sense to me. I've never understood that. Like, at least give the kid a chance for a season or something like that to do what he did that got him to be a top 10 pick and see if it works at a higher level. There's no reason why people can't be a little weird and funky and unorthodox and make it work in baseball.
Right.
That's the one sport you can do that, and you are successful no matter what you do. There's nobody in baseball who does the same workout, does the same diet, does the same batting stance, the same pitching motion. Everybody is different in Major League Baseball. They are all snowflakes, and it all works. That's like the one sport where that's actually able to do that.
And unless you see something
– you all got to block the same way. In basketball, you got to run the same
offense. Right.
In baseball, you can be an individual and be crazy and still be successful. It's the only sport you can do that in.
Unless you see something that you think is a dire health risk.
Yes.
Why is everybody always trying to change the kids they draft? And even that, even if you see something that appears to be a dire health risk, you don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody thought Tim Lincecum's UCL was going to snap the moment he got into Major League Baseball. He's never had that issue.
George Burns, you know what I mean? Smoked cigars every day until he died. He lived to be 150.
I think that's our first George Burns reference of the show.
You just don't know, man.
Oh,
you don't
God.
Know at all.
Right. And that is what I really don't get. And I wonder how much of that is to blame for Tyler Matzik's situation.
I can see
the fact that, and not only that, we have talked about this several times. Tyler Matzik is a very intelligent, very personable, very cool guy to be around and talk to. But with that, he is ultimately extremely self-aware. And in baseball, you have to be a goddamn moron to be successful.
Yeah.
Because it's so much easier to go out, suck, and forget about it when you are an idiot.
Yes.
You know, and like, that's not to say that everybody's an idiot. I mean, one of the smartest guys on the Rockies roster is LaTroy Hawkins. But I think LaTroy is the type of guy who recognized the reason that, and he told me this in a story that I did for Rockies Magazine last year. He said, I was never any good as a starter because I could not clear my hard drive, as the way he put it. He said, 5 days in between starts, if I struggled, all I did was think about it. I just sat around thinking, why did that go so badly? What can I do next time to make sure it doesn't go badly? And I couldn't get a handle on it when I was in the rotation. When they put me in the bullpen, then I got it figured out, because in the bullpen, I don't have to think about that stuff. If I have a bad day, I can go out the next day and make it a good day.
Right.
When you are a starting pitcher and you're a cerebral guy like Tyler Matzik, I think that's a big problem too, is you start to struggle and then you start thinking about your struggles and those build on each other and they snowball and over and over and over, it turns into something worse. And I don't think it helps. And again, I don't know the specifics of it in the Rockies organization, so I am not going to indict, especially this administration, on the sins of the last one. I am not
right.
sure how the Rockies have approached Tyler Matzik with the fact that he is a Mike Marshall guy or what they want him to do to try to get himself sorted out right now. But why draft a kid and then not give him the resources to succeed with the stuff that he is used to doing to be successful? That's what I didn't get about. And I have said many times, I've said it here, I've said it on the MILB podcast, I think that the Rockies were extraordinarily forward-thinking to send Tyler Matzik back to work with Fulmer in 2011. I think that was
yeah.
a very cool thing of the organization to do. But you can't do it every time the guy struggles. So why not try to figure out a way to help him be himself in the organization?
I'm with you.
It just sucks.
Because
he's such a good guy. He's been so much fun to watch when he's been on. And to see a guy like that struggle in that way. I remember back in 2011 when I was working in the Australian League, I was out one night with a bunch of members of the Perth Heat. And the conversation turned to the Yips. And guys talked about it the way that I imagine Civil War veterans talked about seeing the elephant, which was like the term for have you ever been in combat?
Right.
Guys talked about the Yips like,
Yeah, you ever seen anybody go through that? And it was like in hushed tones to make sure nobody else heard the conversation, because it is baseball's version of a terminal illness. If you see somebody lose it, you just have to suffer through that.
Yeah.
And that's awful.
And in baseball, you're watching it happen on television, like Rick Ankiel. I can't imagine what that guy went through, having that happen in a playoff game. And then to come back and reinvent himself as an outfielder.
And be very good at what he did.
Like, Rick Ankiel is incredible. But
I'll never forget the game.
I think he's one in a million.
He threw out Willie Taveras tagging.
Oh my God. It's the best throw I've ever seen.
I was in the press box that game, and I remember the silence that overcame everybody after that throw. Ankiel, this was back in 2008. Rick Ankiel caught a ball at the wall in right center field at Coors Field. Willie Taveras was his second. Taveras tagged.
One of the fastest players in baseball.
I was going to say, maybe the fastest Rocky in team history. Taveras tagged, headed for third, and was gunned down by like a good two steps.
Yeah.
On a line, just on a line from the deepest part of the park, opposite field from third base, and Rick Ankiel gunned him down.
Yeah.
I don't want Tyler Matzek being an outfielder. I'd rather have him being a successful pitcher. I think he could, if anybody could do it, Matzek could probably do it. Tyler Matzek can swing the bat a little bit too.
Okay, but besides Kyle Parker, who is batting 1,000, the best batting average in baseball history right now, Tyler Matzek is second on the Rockies in batting average at .375.
See?
Just saying.
But you really just hope that Tyler Matzek gets it sorted, because it's not – even if he doesn't make it to the major league level and turn into the guy who you really hoped you wanted him to be, you want him to get back. You want him to have success, because he's a great guy. He's fun to watch, and nobody deserves to go through this.
Absolutely not, especially not a guy like him who's worked so damn hard to get back to where he was.
So we're really hoping for the best for Tyler Matzek, because it has not been a fun thing to watch. We are grooving along through episode number 50 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. No guest this week. We're trying to hook up with Ryan Parker from Baseball Prospectus to hopefully talk a whole lot of Tapia perhaps next week. We're probably going to go a little short this week as well, because Rockies first-round pick Brendan Rodgers is going to be joining me for an interview, not on this podcast. It'll be over on the Minor League Baseball Podcast, the show before the show. Hoping to hear from him shortly, and then we are going to try to get him for the PDP. But in addition to that, next week we are going to catch up with Ryan Parker of Baseball Prospectus, and we'll probably just spend the entire hour talking nothing but Tapia. So that,
speaking of Raimel Tapia,
what,
the futures game rosters just were announced.
Fantastic.
And two Rockies prospects made the list, one being Raimel Tapia, made it for the world team, the outfielders. Also Trevor Story, the AA shortstop slash second baseman for the New Britain Rock Cats, he made the U.S. roster. So congratulations to Trevor Story and Raimel Tapia.
Futures game is one of the funnest things.
I love the Futures game.
It's
by the way,
so much fun.
The world outfield, Socrates Brito from the D-backs, Manuel Margot from the Red Sox, Nomar Mazara, one of the biggest Rangers prospects, Yorman Rodriguez, AAA outfielder from the Reds organization, and Tapia.
Wow. Ooh. That is loaded.
Ooh.
That is loaded. The Futures game is so much fun.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. And the jerseys and hats are going to wear this year are pretty cool.
I am going to be there this year. And
I'm going to
spend all of my money.
I am quite jealous. I might send you some money for a Futures game.
Yeah. I'm getting out there the Saturday before the All-Star game.
Okay.
And so I'll be there for the Futures game festivities. And then I'm leaving like late Wednesday.
Okay.
So that's going to be awesome. I get to see my my Wyoming brethren, Brandon Nimmo. He made it from the Mets organization.
You know what's funny is when I see his name, I still think of his brother, because his brother Bryce played in Nebraska when I was there. And so even when I see Brandon's name now, I'm like, oh, yeah, Bryce Nimmo. That's cool.
Oh, I think I mentioned this on this podcast where Bryce Nimmo hit the farthest home run I have ever seen hit off of me when we were in high school together. He hit one.
I think you have said that before.
He hit one when we were playing Cheyenne. He hit one onto Interstate 25, which is about a 460-foot shot from the Cheyenne AA ballpark there.
Nice
work. And AA, meaning Wyoming High School American Legion ball, not AA, like A, AA,
nice
AAA.
I found out something very strange the other day. New York Mets outfielder Kirk Nieuwenhuis, who was like DFA'd by the Mets, picked up by the Angels, DFA'd by the Angels, picked back up by the Mets. I was doing a story on him for MILB.com, and I was looking up his bio, and like, he's from Santa Monica. He went to Azusa Pacific. But as I'm on his baseball reference page, I saw that he went to Denver Christian High School, who was our rivals in high school, and he graduated 2 years after me. So apparently I played against Kirk Nieuwenhuis for 2 years and had no idea.
That's awesome.
So random. We're in the middle of the interview, and I was like, so this is going to be weird, but you went to D.C.? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, I went to Match Buff. And he was like, what? And that was very strange. So the small, weird world of baseball that we live in. So anyway, kind of a depressing episode of the show today, talking about just Eddie Butler and Tyler Matzek. But
womp womp.
Next week, Ryan Parker of Baseball Prospectus will join the show, and we are excited for that.
And honestly, I'm really, really psyched for the Futures game now. I really am.
That's going to be a lot of fun. That'll be a lot of fun. A couple days before the All-Star game in Cincinnati. And cool for Trevor Story and Raimel Tapia. Congratulations to those guys. And, well, you know, we'll talk a lot of Tapia next week with Ryan Parker, because that is all that Ryan Parker will want to talk.
Good. I'm glad about that. That's fine with me. I think he even tweeted out this morning that he's so pissed that Dahl and his freak injury was going to keep him out of the Futures game this year.
That's such a bummer.
He said one of the special players in the minors and impressed in spring training when he saw him. So
stupid spleen.
Yeah, right.
I hate spleens forever.
He should be back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, right.
Like, which is
isn't that amazing?
Just ridiculous. Like, maybe by the end of July. So I guess maybe a month, but
just
still
amazing.
Just ridiculous.
Amazing. Yeah, well, that's going to do it for episode number 550 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. For Anthony Masterson, I'm Tyler Mong. Give us a follow on Twitter at Purple Dinocast. You can email your questions, thoughts, comments, concerns, and music into the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
We need music.
PurpleDinosaurPodcast@gmail.com. We do need music. And yeah, thanks to our guys at Purple Rowan at ESPN Denver for having us. And until next week, we'll talk to you then. And we'll talk to Ryan Parker. Bye.
Bye.
I saw Jurassic World.
And?
Amazing.
Right.
It really is like the perfect summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
Like it like everything about it. Like just enough references to the last one. You know, like the cheesy action movie lines are like really good cheesy action movie lines. it is awesome. It was awesome enough to surpass having a Jimmy Fallon cameo in it.
Yeah, right.
For me.
That was the least welcome part of that entire movie.
Yeah, when that happened, I wanted to walk out of the theater. But
I wish he would have gotten eaten by the Indominus Rex.
Yeah, me too. Also, one of the guys who I work with at MLB said he thinks the reason Fallon was in it was because apparently he does those videos at Disney World. Which makes me never want to go to Disney. No, maybe it's Universal Studios. I don't know, one of them.
Well, Universal Studios, that would make more sense. They're owned by NBC.
Gross.
So
gross. I don't know.
Disneyland, they didn't have any of that when I was there.
Okay. Yeah, I don't ever want to ever go there ever now.
Ever, 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 ever,
ever, ever, ever, ever,
ever, ever, ever, ever.